Welcome to the Lead Defend Podcast, a show designed to help you grow in faith and leadership as you navigate the stages of young adulthood. We address important faith topics and provide practical life tips, helping you build up your faith as you engage a changing culture. Now, here are your hosts.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Lead Defend. And while Ryan's not with me today, I do have Bill Newton. Bill, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you here with us. At the time of this recording, we're getting ready to have the Lead Defend conference tomorrow. Always check out leaddefend.org to find out about events and things coming up, new podcast episodes, etc. But also today, we have Brent Crow here with us. And Brent, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what you do.
Well, that could take up the whole episode. Well, let me try to give you the Wikipedia version so we can get to something. My name's Brent. I've been married for 21 years. I have 6 children. I live on a small little farm in a little town that nobody's ever heard of outside of Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. I help lead an organization called Student Leadership University, which is trained about 250,000 students to think, dream, and lead at the feet of Jesus.
And it feels great to know that I was one of those 250,000 students.
you told me that right before we went
back in 2010. Cool. I got a chance to go to Student Leadership University, and so if you're a student pastor, a leader of young adults, and are interested in more, I would encourage you to go and check that out. But Brent, you're here today to talk to us a little bit about leadership. When was the first time that you thought of yourself as a leader?
That's a good question, buddy. I think the first time I really thought of myself as a leader is when somebody put me in charge of something. Hmm. There's something about a consequence if you don't get it right, a risk factor involved in a project or a task or whatever it might be. And so the first time that I was asked to be in charge of something, and I remember what it was, I was asked to be in charge of something. I was working the graveyard shift at FedEx loading and unloading trucks all night long, and I got asked to be in charge of what trucks would go into what bay, and then we'd all divvy up, and I'd tell people where to go, and then I was one of the people that would jump in the trucks, and we would just, and I'd been there for several months. The guy, I mean, it wasn't like there was money involved, or it's just like, hey, tonight you're in charge of telling people where to go, and I went, okay, if I don't get this right, there's a risk, there's a consequence, that's probably the first time I was in my late, I think I was 19 years old, and I was like, okay, all right, I see this. This is a little bit of leadership.
Yeah, and since that point, I mean, I think it's safe to say you've in some ways given your life to the study and practice of leadership. You've mentioned doing your PhD work in leadership. Obviously, Student Leadership University is geared towards developing young leaders. What makes you so passionate about leadership? Why leadership?
Well, I think that, first of all, it goes back to that age-old question, are leaders born or are leaders made? The answer is yes. I think that every person, based on good theology, has leadership potential and capacity. I think that we're all created infinitely valuable. We're made in the image of God. There are creation gifts in the creation narrative, relationship, freedom, and creativity or imagination. We've been set apart to the gospel of God, and God has called us to advance His mission. And you can't look at all of that and go, yeah, we're not to care about our influence. No, we're to care greatly about our influence. And so I see the work of leadership through several lens, but at some point, if you're going to have a healthy conversation about leadership as a follower of Jesus, you're talking about applied theology. And so there's this notion that I am cultivating my influence for the glory of God as a disciple of Jesus, and there's a lot that goes into that. Hmm. But that's kind of our kind of philosophical launching off point, is that it's not hey, if you show up or you do this or you get a diploma or you do, no, it's not if you go through SLU that makes you a leader. It's those who go as a follower of Jesus, as somebody who's separated to the gospel of God. How do I steward that influence well? In other words, for the Christian, leadership is devotional before it is ever practical. In other words, leadership begins at the feet of Jesus. And if there's one thing I've probably said more than anything else in my ministry, it's that little statement, that leadership begins at the feet of Jesus. In other words, it starts with what God has done, not with what I can do. It starts with His accomplishments in me, and for me and on my behalf, rather than what I can learn based on principles, go out and pull off on my own. Yeah. So that would probably be kind of my understanding of the subject, if you will.
Yeah. So what happens if people approach leadership before they find themselves at the feet of Jesus?
Well, I think it can go a lot of different directions. That question could be answered any number of ways, but pick up any history book and look at how things gone awry, and you'll get an answer to that question. Or pick up any history book, study of history, and look at how people have misinterpreted Christianity or proposed a false gospel, mm-hmm. and you'll find some of the same results. I think the great benefit of leadership beginning at the feet of Jesus is what Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, when he said that they would look at our good deeds, our good works, and they would glorify our Father in heaven.
Yeah.
So when we influence correctly, it leads to others knowing God intimately. And when we don't do that, when our leadership is not properly motivated, I think, I'll just say it this way, it leads to what we have right now. It leads to a fragmented, fractured, polarized culture that has become very tribal, where even, and this is going to get me kicked off the Brock and Bill podcast, but where even evangelicals can't have civil conversations anymore, because if I don't agree with you, then you're not of my tribe, therefore I have to get you away from me. And that's called polarization. That's a social science word. That's how social scientists use that word. There's books written about that, but we're living it right now. Yeah. When people don't lead well, when there is a leadership vacuum, healthy leadership is not available, culture divorces itself from moral values that used to be the norm.
Yeah.
And then what happens is we go and everybody does what is right in their own eyes, to quote the book of Judges. Hmm.
So leadership is one of those things that's obviously key in ministry. But if someone were to come to you and just say, what would you give as a basic definition of leadership starting out?
Yeah.
How would you define that? Because in my time in youth ministry for years, having student leadership teams, we went through lots of leadership material, some SLU, some leader tracks, all kinds of stuff. Everybody had a varying definition for leadership.
Yeah.
So if someone were to come to say, Brent, just give me your definition for leadership, what would you say?
Yeah, well, I mean, basically it's influence.
Great. Okay.
It's cultivated influence, and as a Christian, it's cultivated influence for the glory of God.
Great.
Or it's cultivated influence seen through the lens of a biblical worldview. But it's influence that you cultivate on purpose.
Yeah, good. I love that basic definition. Because one of the things I've encountered over the years is people are like, well, I'm not a leader because I'm not up on stage or because I don't have the title. And so I love
that. Or I don't have this personality.
Yes.
That
so,
yeah.
So, I love that. And I appreciate that as well. A professor I had used the same kind of definition. Really, he explained that there's two different thoughts of leadership. One is more influence-based, and the other is like followership-based. And so what's really the difference between thinking through leadership is, okay, the influence that you have, because that kind of opens it up for the possibility for anyone to lead, not to say that everyone's a leader, but everyone can have some influence in some way, shape, or form. So not that everyone's a leader, but anyone can lead in the setting that they're in. How is that maybe different than before, of leadership is just having people following you?
I don't think there is much of a difference. I think if you're influencing and nobody's following you, you're not influencing.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, I mean, Maxwell gets all the credit in the world for the quote, but others said it, I think, as well. And if nobody's following you, you're just taking a walk. You're not leading anybody. So I think that if you're going to do something that matters and you're going to cultivate your influence towards fulfilling the desired will of God, you're going to need people who are on board. God really, really never accomplishes things in history, rarely in the scripture, in a vacuum. Sometimes he chooses just to use an individual alone in a vacuum. That person did it, and God used them. Yeah. Most of the time, there's a team effort.
Yeah.
Most of the time, there's a team approach. Most of the time, there is a cohort of maybe leaders who are following somebody who has the ultimate vision or goal or objective or whatever it might be. And you think about the Apostle Paul and the missionary journeys.
Yeah.
Now you think about, Paul would not have been on those missionary journeys had Barnabas not gone to get him.
Right.
Barnabas is the renegade outlier who got sent from Jerusalem, which is a church that went real quick,
yeah,
and went to Antioch and then went, this is amazing, revival, awakening. You know what? I know somebody who needs to be a part of this party. And he went and got Paul. Well, who ends up leading those three missionary journeys? It's primarily Paul, but he had a cohort of leaders who were there for the journey with him. And so rarely do you find somebody doing something on their own. And so I would say it's necessary that there are those who have bought into whatever that vision, everything that you're going to accomplish with leadership, it's got to have some kind of vision attached to it. Mm-hmm. And you need a cohort of those who are believers and even evangelists for that vision.
Hmm. Good.
So we have really two different groups of folks that listen to this. One would be folks kind of in the 18 to 25 range.
Yeah.
Others will be leaders of those.
Yeah.
So for those who are students first, who fit that 18 to 25 range, who are interested in developing their leadership skills and influence for the gospel, what are some just basic things you would point them toward?
Well, first of all, I'd point them toward answering one question, and that would be, what would it look like for God to get his way? Mm. You know, that Micah 6:8 text where, what does the Lord require of us? I don't know why, but we stopped asking that question. And so you're never going to get to the right leadership conclusions if you don't start with the right questions. What does God want? What does the Lord require of me? And yeah, it's going to lead you to, you know, walk humbly and to do justice. And Micah gives us the answer, right? But the question is one that really almost answers itself, and we don't ask it as much as we used to. And so I would start with, what does God want? The Bible is filled with the expressed wants of God. And you can't go, everything God wants is going to be fulfilled through my life, but God can, God's going to accomplish something through your life. So why not go on a journey to figure out what that is? Then number two, I wouldn't waste a season being passive. I don't think there's any room in the leadership journey for passivity. Don't sit on a sideline. If you don't know exactly what you're going to do, that's okay. There's been about 1,000 times in my life I had no idea what I was going to do.
Yeah.
But never waste moments. Always look to prepare. You go, prepare for what? Always be preparing. And so if you don't know what you're supposed to get your degree in, that's okay, because there's about 4 semesters worth of credits you got to get, no matter what your degree is in.
That's right.
So don't get passive going, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, do something, right? Pick up a book, read a book, go to a conference, go to a class, like take a seminar. Do something to acquire a skill, to acquire knowledge. Because the preparation, you know, like right now I'm writing a book it's a biography on William Wilberforce, in which I study the motivating factors in Wilberforce's life and kind of Wilberforce's life. Wilberforce was led to the abolition of the slave trade in England and the emancipation of slaves in 1833. Now, in Britain, and so that was part of my dissertation. That was 12 years ago, man. I didn't think I'd write a book on it. You know, you never know what you're going to do today and how that's going to be used of the Lord down the road.
Yeah.
So I just know this, God smiles on those who don't waste moments. And so I would get busy doing something that is going to prepare you for something else. And then the third thing I would do is I would really, really, really make sure that I had either a person or a series of leaders in my life who love Jesus, who I look up to. In fact, if I could be specific, I would say I'd get 3 kind of leaders in your life. Number one, get somebody who's a chapter ahead of you in the story. In other words, if they got some scars, they haven't completely healed yet. Like, they're just ahead of you. You're going to be walking where they walk very soon. Get somebody who's several chapters ahead of you in the story, who's older, who's seasoned, who's got some stuff to offer, and it's really clear in their memory. And then I would go to that under-resourced person in our culture, somebody who's at the end of their journey. Because that person's got a lot to offer in a different kind of way. They don't remember everything like the guy that's older,
but they have
a lot more wisdom than the guy that's older. So I'd get some older people, some old people, and some really old people in my life. And I would make sure that I had that kind of a loose community, if you will, of people who were investing in me. So what does God require? How can I prepare myself? And who's pouring into me? That's what I would say.
That's good. That's a lot of things to be proactive in. You mentioned one of the things, just passivity. Are there any other things that you see are maybe some key things that are keeping people from stepping into leadership?
Yeah, I would say that we are a culture who has to label everything we do.
Yeah.
Now, let me be really honest with you, buddy. I believe there are real mental health challenges. I believe anxiety is real. I believe depression is real. I believe there's a whole host of things that are getting categorized that were never categorized before, and they've always been real. We just understand them better.
Yeah.
But I also believe in social contagion.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that everybody gets paralyzed in the moment because they don't know how to self-diagnose or they're busy self-diagnosing. Hmm. And so what I would say is don't let your shortfalls become your excuses.
Yeah.
And the probably the most common thing that I see students do is they come up with a list of reasons that, of what's wrong with them first. Mm-hmm. And they use that to disqualify them from being active. In other words, it paralyzes them. It causes them to be passive. And I got a lot. There's a lot of mental health challenges in our family, and not just with, like, I've adopted three children. I had three the old-fashioned way, and both my homemade kids and my adopted kids. We all have challenges,
yeah.
And we identify them. But one of the things that my kids know very well is, whatever causes me to limp today will not be my excuse tomorrow. Hmm. And I'm trying to sow that mentality into them over, because I never want them to go, well, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be done. No, right? Like, whatever your limp is today can be your superpower tomorrow.
Hmm.
Like, how can you take that? And I mean, that's what Paul did with the thorn in the side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so how can you look at, you know, whether it's ADHD or anxiety or OCD or whatever these things are that keep you. Number one, are they real or is it social contagion? Number two, if they're real, how can you then channel that and use that for the glory of God?
Yeah. So we've talked about what leadership is. We've talked about how to prepare for leadership. I want to take a moment. Why is leadership so important, especially maybe in the cultural, historical moment we're in right now? I could see a lot of young people saying, man, leadership has a little bit of a bad reputation right now. Whenever I look on social media, another leader's fallen or another leader's getting attacked unfairly. I don't want to put myself in that type of bullseye. Why is leadership so important, and why is it worth taking the risks that come with it?
And by the way, Brock, in all disciplines of culture, politically,
mm-hmm.
in the church, sports, mm-hmm. I mean, literally, what you just said is happening across disciplines in culture, across emphases in culture. I would say there's some of us listening that would go, you know, I just, it's not worth it, right? Like, I'm just going to go down the end of the road, mind my own, live a good life.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. As a disciple of Jesus, we don't have the option to go live at the end of the road and do my own and live my life. And like,
that's right.
It's just not an option. The mission of God calls to us every morning with the sunrise to be involved, to engage. So that's off the table. You can't go, yeah, I'm just going to go to the end of the road. So if you can't go to the end of the road and just do your own life and let everything pass you by, then you might as well be involved to the best of your ability. And here's the leaders get to be the architects of culture. So the things you hate tomorrow, you can the things you hate today, you can change tomorrow. If you're the leader that goes, I'll be a catalytic leader in cultural change. Like, nobody, I've never heard one person say, I love the fact that we're so divided.
Mm.
This division stuff is just great. I mean, maybe a racist or something, but I've not heard any rational, logical thinking person. But yet we're all in it.
Yeah.
We're all guilty of it to some extent or another. You know, so I hear so many students who hate identity politics. They hate the fact that we're fragmented. They hate this. They hate that. They hate this. And I'm just, what we do is we just wake up every day and go, then let us help you change it.
Yeah.
Let's take all the excuses off the table. Because, by the way, if I understand the grace of Jesus, Jesus took away all the excuses. So there are none. So what are you going to do to change the world for the glory of God? What are you going to do to get involved? And by the way, if you don't, there are very, very real consequences, which we all know. I mean, you know, and we've lived them and we've seen them, and we've seen the slippery slope of the leadership vacuums and the cultural collateral damage that is left behind. You're either going to leave something in your wake when you're dead and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either going to be something tragic or something God-honoring. Mm-hmm. And I want to lead in such a way that whatever's in my wake led to change that honored Jesus. So that's what I would say, buddy.
That's great.
That's good. Any practical steps you would give to the leaders of that 18 to 25 group? Anything you would just say, hey, this is a way to point them or something to know?
Yeah, I would say if you have the beautiful privilege of stewarding those who are younger, I would say number one, you don't try to keep up with every single fad and every single thing and every, like, you don't have to be a pop culture apologist to be able to
just made
to
somebody's
connect,
day
to be able to, I mean, it's
they just exhaled a sigh of sweet release,
and maybe that's the first step.
Yeah,
let's just exhale and go, you know what, I don't have to know everything.
Yeah,
I do have to be a certain type of person.
Yeah.
But I don't have to know everything about the culture I'm trying to impact. And so I'd say, number one, don't try to know everything. Number two, focus strongly on relationship building skills. Some people are good at it. Some people have to work at it. But focus strongly on building relationship skills. Number three, if you have a student ministry or a Bible study or a parachurch ministry, whatever you have, if it's over about 10 people, you're going to have to get some other people involved. So your job's not, if you're the leader, not maybe not to know everybody, but rather it's to make sure that everybody's known. And so I would make sure that I would focus strongly on leadership. I mean, excuse me, on relationship skills. I wouldn't worry about what I can't master because it's going to change tomorrow anyways. And then I would say create a simplified paradigm that helps you continually aim at a grand vision. And that'll be contagious. That'll be magnetic, actually. Let me say that again. A simplified paradigm of leading and doing ministry. But yet, if somebody's looking at that paradigm, they go, it's pretty audacious in what it's aiming at.
Yeah.
That's attractive. That's attractive to Gen Z. It's going to be attractive to Gen Alpha. It's going to hit all the right nerves. There is an organicness. I know that's not a word, but an organicness that is attractive. Like, okay, in our ministry, we focus on these areas. We're going to do this well. And we're going to do this well because we're aiming at this big vision.
Yeah.
I think there's something both freeing, exhaling, something both freeing and attractive in that philosophy or approach.
So for you making leaders, maybe SLU, what are those things for you guys? What are the things that you guys are focused on? Like, what's your wheelhouse as far as what you're focusing on when it comes to making leaders?
Rules and tools of leadership. I borrow that phrase from West Point, but it's a tried and true phrase. What are the core rules and tools of leadership? How do you redeem the time? So we actually focus a lot on time management. We think that's a biblical thing. And then imagination, creativity, and dreaming. Right? What would you do for the glory of God if you knew you wouldn't fail? And as you go throughout the SLU journey, when we study historical leadership, biblical leadership, 90% of what we're doing revolves around those three ideas. What are the rules and tools of leadership that stand the test of time, that are true in this culture, in this environment, at this time in history? How are people making the most of the moments? How are they managing their time? And then, and by the way, to me, some of the best things to do is to read these journals from people who've lived and died and left something behind. And it was their way in their time of managing their time.
Yeah.
People read their diaries out loud to one another by the fire at night, and that was their way of holding themselves accountable of not wasting their time.
Yeah.
The mortality rate was a lot lower. I mean, people died earlier then, excuse me, and life expectancy wasn't what it is now, and so maybe there was a little bit more urgency. But then also, if you study history, you're studying the history of people who dreamed big and made a difference.
Man, that's so good. Thank you for being on here with us. Hey, if people have enjoyed this conversation, they want to hear more, where can they find you? Maybe mention your podcast again, socials, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you can follow me at Brent A. Crow. I say A because some...
Isn't there another?
There's a middle schooler that got Brent Crow because I was slow on the trigger for social media and posted for years about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but there you go. There's the joy of student ministry. At Brent A. Crow, at SLU Lead, and then our podcast is Chasing Elephants, the Chasing Elephants podcast.
Chasing Elephants. The name of that podcast, where did it come from?
Came from a book I wrote called Chasing Elephants.
Okay.
It's a good book, by the way. Thank you, man. Appreciate that. Which was really an ethic of decision-making with it in your freedom in Christ. It's an ethics book. And so what we do at the Chasing Elephants podcast is we take a whole host of issues, but the common thread is we're always applying a set of principles or an ethic for how to to answer those questions. So
there you go.
There's where it comes
go
from.
Go check out Chasing
Elephants. Killing Elephants.
No poaching involved. No elephants were harmed in the making of Chasing Elephants. We'll go check out more from Brent and Chasing Elephants. And while you're there, check out leaddefend.org. We've always got a lot of cool podcasts coming out, and the conference is right around the corner. So check us out, and we look forward to spending time with you next time.
That's it for this episode of Lead Defend. To hear more episodes from the Lead Defend crew, visit absc.org/podcasts. If you liked what you heard, rate and review us on your favorite podcast listening site. Want to learn more information about the next Lead Defend conference? Visit leaddefend.org.